welcome aboard our vessel. I'll be your captain. Join me and my trusty ally, the cook, as we set sail through our relationship with music, film, literature, and everything in between, as well as our ongoing exploration into mental health and well-being. Anchors up. Happy 100. Celebrate good times.
Very good times. Very good journey.
Ba, ba, da, ba. Ba, ba.
How long are we into it? So this is episode 100. How long have we been going?
We've had 2 pints.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. How many we got to go?
Yeah, probably one more.
when we had the tournament, so we come up to the anniversary of talking about it, though, didn't we? In the pub.
Yeah, it's round about
Christmas.
Now. Yeah.
And how many? 2 years?
It was January was the first one we released. So we're coming up 3 years.
Wow.
No, it's 3 years, which I was like, oh, we haven't done many. That's basically 30 episodes a year we've done.
That's not bad.
So you guys can't complain.
Yeah, we do, and we do it for nothing but the love and the odd present.
The odd.
Pseudo cool.
Yep, thank you.
And Tom Meyer will say thank you to you.
Yep.
But Tom Brown. Tom Brown. Yeah, he sent us some beers. He did.
As well, yeah.
Congratulations, Tom Brown, by the way, as well, on the birth of his child.
Oh, lovely.
Don't like to give away any details. I don't know if people are allowed to give any
visit,
but he's had a child with his partner, which massive congratulations. Yeah. But
we're in a secret location.
We're not going to reveal
yet. We're not going to reveal where we are. We've been in our travels.
Shall we say the name of the pub we're in?
Rigby's.
See if people can glean what they will.
They're going to Google, aren't they? But anyway, so challenges. So we had to do different reflections, didn't we?
You did.
Well, I did. So I had to reflect on my favourite moments from the pod.
Yes.
So I think one that always makes me chuckle is when we recorded with Drew from Blue Amber and how hot that space was. The fact that we are using cans of Heineken to cool ourselves down.
I know. Do you know what that bit reminds me of? Was, you know, when Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura, he was inside the rhino?
Yeah.
There's that like little like
us two and Drew just in there. Yeah. Another one. I have to give Pseudocore a shout out when we all found out we were left-handed.
Yep.
So that was great. But I think, sort of more sentimental is seeing you grow in reflectiveness.
Yeah.
And I go back to the mindful coffee, I think was one of the first challenges I set you. And actually just, how we've both learned, me on music and my interest in being able to talk more. Like, I can hold conversations with people about music now, but then you would learn about just the impact of different things and actually the way, with parenting as well, sort of being very more aware and just noticing, like, the letters to Nora, those sort of things. And you really, it's not, you don't just do it, you understand why you do it. So, and actually just the girls getting friends as well.
Yeah, we've seen.
Well, we think they're friends.
Well, I think they're probably closer than us.
They probably are, yeah.
We don't speak after the pod, do we?
No, we don't. They see each other more than we see each other, so.
No, then, like, that's really nice you'd say. I think it's like we've always had an interest in mental health, but I think working with you, I understand it more.
Mm.
Not working, being my friend, but working on this with you.
Yeah.
Because it's your job, and you know about it. So you can when I don't understand things, you kind of can explain it.
Yeah.
And then it makes sense to me. So, and I think that's what we try then to do through the pod, don't we? We try and bring these things forward. And that was the idea. And I think going back to, like, being sat in the pub,
yeah,
it's such, like, it's so proud of you. Yeah.
Yeah,
because
it's
gone 10 in and thought, oh, stuff this. Because we had to go through teams, didn't we? We had to buy equipment. Yeah. We had to work out different ways of doing it. It's not always perfect on sound. We just try and do it as naturally as podcasts are meant to be.
Well, at the moment,
we're recording on a phone. Yeah,
that's it. It's just, that's how we work. You know?
Yeah. And I've got mics back in the bag, but you just said, let's go for it now. We weren't going to do it now, were you? And you went, let's just do it now. That's how we work.
Yeah. So yours.
Yeah, the images. I think, like, look, we'll post it up and we'll let it do it for itself. It was two ways of going it. You can either, because I've been practicing my doodling, as we've said in the pod with Nora. Don't take this as a judgment, by the way, people. But it was more like, do you go try and do it in a way where, oh, this is actually my effort?
Yeah.
Or do you go comic? And I'll let people decide.
Awesome. And what we'll do, maybe, is we'll ask Nora to draw in as well. And we'll let people vote as to which one was you. And which one is?
Can you imagine? It
by
was
a 4-year-old.
Can you imagine? Norris was like a proper,
really good,
anyway,
heart attack style. But I also want to touch. I set you a challenge quite a while ago that you completed, and I was to watch a rugby game with me.
Oh yeah, we guess we completed another one.
I know we did. We completed an old one. we went to watch Gloucester.
Gloucester.
Yep, you're learning against Leicester. Gloucester came second, unfortunately.
Yeah, which is first the worst.
First the worst, second the best.
Second the best.
No, I don't know who's third. Maybe the ref's got a hairy chest. But yeah, we took the gold. Yeah. You know, it was nice charity, you know, well, auction. I won it.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, charity auction. So money went to a good cause. And yeah.
Good deal, though. Train up. Couple of tinnies on the train. We had a few beers. We came back for some food. Proper quality time when it's together, and the girls sort of got that their time there, we got our time, and we had our time all together. And we've got a couple of nice plans of a Christmas well, which we might talk about on future pods. But
you're hooked,
I'm hooked
on disappointment.
I'm a Gloucester fan. Although recently, put your finger out, right, if you listen to this, because we were disappointed.
Imagine he does.
I know, I can't imagine. But no.
Come on the pod, give us money.
We want your cash.
So we've got a very important person to talk about. We're moving location to record that bit, so we will pop up with that. So this is another one where we've gone away, like Bournemouth, you know, where we will pop up in different locations talking about different things. So we will be back,
and we've got this one right, haven't we? This
we
is
have
where we've
got
married
this one
us
right,
all up.
But let's see if we can get a cheers for now. Happy 100th.
Yucky da.
Okay, so I think we can fully announce where we are now.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, now we're sat here. We had a couple of beers, and now we've got a cup of tea to calmly talk through this. But we made a little trip, didn't we?
We did. We've come to Liverpool. I think despite their football team, I do love this place. I love the whole atmosphere around the city, firstly. I mean, obviously, the Beatles' presence is obviously massive. They're mad for their football up there. But, you know, I think I've said to you before, I've gone to Liverpool many times, and you can almost go any night of the week, and the place is just jumping, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we went to a lot of places last night. The one thing I love is that commitment to live music.
Mm-hmm.
I think every bar we went in after sort of 6 o'clock had a singer or someone in the background. Yeah. We went to the Cavern, didn't we?
We did.
We kind of had to, you know. And we walked down to the seafront this morning and we saw the statue, got some photos which we share on Instagram. But it just felt right, didn't it? It completes the Beatles quartet, it's number 100, and he's kind of probably one of the biggest characters as
it
well,
is.
Isn't he?
Yeah, and I know it's one that you've obviously had lined up for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, and we have, I think it's nice to properly immerse.
Yeah.
You know, we properly immersed. You went to Liverpool, we did all the bits and bobs. You know, it's just,
Let's talk about, so we've got John Winston Lennon, I should say, at the time of death. He was John Winston, oh no, Lennon. I was wondering off
that's
the back of that. Pop, like, you know, at that time, when he, you know, taking Yoko's surname as well as his own. So I know they were very much about being one. We'll come on to their relationship. But I just, as I said that out loud then, I thought that's quite interesting.
Especially, like I said, in that time. I know it happens a bit now. I know there's a rugby player did it. Lloyd, changed his name to Lloyd Ashley. So he took his wife's name. But
1969, that's a long quite you know, forward thinking, but you know, obviously born in Liverpool, had, you know, I suppose a difficult upbringing. His father was a merchant seaman and was actually away when John was born. His mum, Julia, was a bit of a, they call her bohemian, I suppose, just a girl about town, but very for the time. You talk about the 40s, she liked the imported black music. She liked to go to dances. She was what they say the word promiscuous, but don't, you know, be careful how you use that. She was able, you know, she was well within her rights to do what she was doing at the time. Obviously the father of John wasn't around, so so John, when he was being at to cut a long story short, he ends up with his Aunt Mimi, doesn't he, because the mum is struggling to raise him, and Aunt Mimi didn't have any children. So you'll hear a lot, anyone who's had any sort of time spent on a Beatles story with John Lennon will know about Aunt Mimi. And then, not only losing his father, he lost his mum, didn't he, tragically? It was an off-duty police officer run his mum over drunk, I think.
And there was actually when his mum was on her way to visit him.
That's right.
So just for him, sort of that feeling of the guilt he'd have.
I was going to bring you in a second. I was thinking with that as well. No, you're right. No, that's a really good, absolutely no problem. I was talking about where he, like, with his mum, they had a bit of a troubled start, obviously.
Yeah.
But then they rebuilt. And actually, his Aunt Mimi was the one who was against him getting into music because he wasn't great in school. They called him a bit of a troublemaker, a bit of a bully. Which is no surprise, really, of his upbringing. But he was good at art. He was loved the skiffle movement. He could draw. He liked to write fake newspaper articles and stuff like that. And his mum really encouraged him and actually bought him his first guitar.
Yeah.
And taught him to play a little bit. And like I said, as they sort of get into a position where they've got a good relationship, she dies tragically. Mm. And obviously after losing his father, then losing his mum.
Yeah.
And I think that's difficult. So yeah, look, there's a lot in that opening part. We've cut down a massive, you know, start of his life. Yeah. But for time, yeah, what do you think of that?
Yeah, and I think it's sort of, he's touching on a bit of his dad as well. And his dad's dad was brought up in an orphanage.
That's right.
You know, so there's a lot of that absent parent cycle, you know, going round. And it's not surprising, I mean, the element of toxicity in some of his relationships as he grew up, you know, when we introduce other people into this chat. But I forgot where I was going to go then. That was it. It's interesting for me, the fact that it was his mum who introduced him into Elvis.
Yes.
And all those sort of bits. Yeah, and his mum was such a big influence whilst not being always around for him. But then also, didn't his dad try to take him away as well?
Yeah, he did.
And I think it was to New Zealand or something.
He found out about the mum, I think, not doing a great job coming from him.
Yeah.
You know, but they came back and did, I think, have custody effectively, sort of took him for a little while. But it was very complicated. And I think you could imagine John almost, he chose his father, I think, at the time.
Mm.
How confusing is that for the mum?
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very complex situation. But I think it must have been agreed in the end between the family that the best place for him to land was with Mimi, who probably finally provided him that bit of stability that he hadn't had. But yeah, very interesting the end up with his dad, and very interesting about the granddad having the orphanage upbringing as well. Yeah. And it sort of trickles down through the family, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then also his link with authority as well.
Yeah.
You know, after what his mum and, you know, an off-duty police officer. But then also, the officer wasn't charged.
I know. Yeah. You know,
so, and it, you know, it says sort of here that basically after the death, he drunk heavily, he got into fights, Brian Rage, you know, and that was his reaction.
Yeah.
You know, he fought back. And then, you know, further on down the line, when you look at how he is with authority and how he stands up against things, you can see the influence
from
years and years ago from his upbringing. But obviously then, you know, I never actually realised the name of the first group was named after their school.
Yeah, that's right, the Quarry Bank
High School. So, yeah, so then he met a group of other people, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Well, I mean, you know, obviously, you can get into, you know, probably massive Beatle fans, like we call ourselves massive Beatle fans, but you can get really sort of forensic about this and talk about all the name changes. But ultimately, he's in art school, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he forms a band called the Quarrymen, named after the school, and skiffle, obviously. It was a skiffle band, which was a very much DIY style of music that came out from America. So you could use washboards, pots, pans, anything that could make a noise, really, to make sounds. And it was at a fete, wasn't it, basically? The Walton Village fete or something like that. The McCartney was there. He saw John, struck up a conversation with him, and they pretty much immediately became best friends because of their absolute fascination with music. John had already started writing his own songs. Paul had as well. And I think from there, it's handy. One's left-handed, one's right-handed.
Yeah.
And I think from that, pretty much that moment, they were writing together. Because they're talking about, they've literally written hundreds of songs over there, especially in those early days. But it goes through a couple of changes then, because obviously Paul was friends with George Harrison, who's a couple of years younger, but he knew he could play guitar. And I think he had an audition on a bus, I think. I think Paul brought him on a bus to meet John, and George had his guitar and played, and John was like, you're in the band. Stu Sutcliffe was another big friend of John's at the time, wasn't it? And I think in the first iteration of the Beatles, he actually played the bass guitar for them. And they had Pete Best on drums, because he was a son of Mona Best, who ran the Caspar Coffee Shop, which was another sort of scene in Liverpool. But I think it's then they get over to Hamburg, don't they, basically? And They sort of say that Pete's, they're getting a bit of headway. Pete's not really up to the challenge, they think, on drumming. But they met Ringo on the tours of Liverpool and on Hamburg, so they sort of invited him. Stu Sutcliffe left the band. So you've kind of then, you're left with Paul picking up the bass, John playing sort of rhythm, George on lead, and obviously Ringo on the drums. But yeah, I think those days in Hamburg, the Stuart Sutcliffe, did you look at that much, the story about Stu?
No, I'll be honest, yeah.
So it comes back to the point of John having sort of attachment issues, doesn't it? And like from his from what happened through his life, and he'd get very fixated on someone. So one, it'd either be like, it's all about you now, Bryn, but someone else comes along and I've cut you off and I'm going to go over here now and hang around with this person. That sort of happened from Paul to Stu, because Stu was the good-looking one, naturally cool, was very arty. But they got into a fight during a gig.
Okay.
And Stu got hit really hard in the head. And there was talk that that's actually what led to the brain hemorrhage.
Okay.
Because he was very ill after it, and he went to the doctors but sort of didn't follow up on it and died. And then his girlfriend, who was a German called Astrid, and she took a lot of photos of the Beatles in the early days, said that that destroyed John.
Right.
At the time, with Stu, and said that he was always talking about Stu afterwards. So, again, I'm just thinking more loss.
More loss, yeah.
Of a good friend, you know. But,
And someone who very close to, very attached to, you know. And then I guess the question is then, how easily does he trust? Because if it's like, well, if I trust you too much, you're just going to walk away from
exactly.
me. And you're going to leave me. And that's maybe where the, you know, you get it quite a lot with adoption and fostering, that when people feel settled, that's when the children start to create chaos, because they're not used to feeling settled.
So
they want to bring in more chaos and, you know, almost like end or disrupt the placement, because
that's interesting.
Safety is almost scary.
Yeah, true. And yeah, like you say, I suppose that element, like you said, I didn't really think about it like that. You know, if I invest so much time into some person, then they go.
Yeah.
How hard is that? I know. And I think sort of for John, you sort of see then, the Beatles, we can't sort of underemphasize this. They worked really hard in Hamburg. I mean, they were playing like 8 hours a day and living in a van, living in each other's pockets. But that's where they were writing.
Yeah.
And obviously at the Cavern as well, when they were back in Liverpool, they sort of were the Cavern's darlings. And Brian Epstein goes there one night, basically sees them and says, he sees something in them. But he's like, right, I'll take you on.
Yeah.
But you've got to listen to me.
Yeah.
And that, I think, for John, they've always said was the first sort of father figure that then came into his life after his sort of uncle, because his uncle passed away young as well, didn't he? After
in 55, is it? Yeah,
crazy, really, isn't it? You think of all the death that life is surrounding him. But Brian Epstein comes in and says, "Right, I'm gonna." He basically says, "I'll make you famous. You've got to listen to me, though."
Yeah.
It was like, "Right, you've got to smarten up your act on stage, and we'll get you down to London. We'll get you a recording contract." And after being rejected a few times, they end up with George Martin, who's the legendary producer who takes them on. And after they recorded a couple from that he didn't like, but then they eventually landed on Love Me Do.
Yeah.
Interestingly, John plays the harmonica on that. And I think, I'm sure, his father was a sort of like, would have been classed as like a session musician in nowadays. Yeah. Was a good musician in his own right. And played the harmonica as well.
Yeah.
So again, that little hand, the first single they do is like on the harmonica. So I don't want to whistle then. But yeah, so I think for him, it's like then he's got what he wants. Because is there an element with John, do you think, where he would have like been in the centre of attention after all of being the problems he'd had growing up?
Yeah. So it's the whole, you know, as I think I've said it before, where people say that you're attention seeking, but you're attachment seeking. So you want to be the centre because people will come around you.
Right.
People will be there for you. And you want to disrupt as well, because people will come to you and sort of just be there to look after you and be around you. And it's interesting also with relationships. And for me, sort of, I watched Love Is All You Need, I think it is, a documentary.
Yes. Yeah.
And they were saying that they couldn't announce when John married Cynthia because the fans.
That's right.
And how the fans would have reacted. It slipped out eventually. But to begin with, it was a secret that one of the Beatles was married.
They wanted to create that he's single, he's available, because obviously the hysteria was bonkers, wasn't it? You're looking at like post-war kids or people that were born during the war, who'd had probably, they went through the end of the 40s into the 50s of financial difficulty because they were still rationing and all of that. Then the rock and roll movement sort of comes from America over, but it was American. The Beatles were almost like one of the, because there were other rock bands around. I remember like when they used to go to London, my Bamp saw him in London, and he said it used to be called the Northern Invasion. So they used to bring down, I think it was Jerry and the Pacemakers, and Beatles were like second or third on the bill the night you saw them. But they but they exploded. It was all over a year. Like you're talking about like 1963 or whatever it was. And then they become, well, I mean, UK, they absolutely dominated it. But the hard part then was to go the other way to America. But they just did it before they even got there.
Yeah.
Because the singers made their way over, didn't they?
Yeah. And I don't, one of the ways that it was described when they arrived, obviously the amount of fans were there. Somebody said basically the screaming of the fans sounded like another jet landing.
Wow.
That's how, like, ear piercing.
Jeepers. And yeah. Like, you know, you can imagine for him and the others, like, you know, being from Liverpool, you know, having ordinary upbringings, working class upbringings, to then just be literally revered.
Yeah.
Because it went then from America to around the world, you know, like, and they couldn't go anywhere. Like, Australia, remember, they got chased through Australia. There's footage of John, like, where he's stepping out of a car or stepping towards a car, and these two of them, like, grab him, you know, like, and he's being pulled, you know, and it, you know, you can even imagine that's when it started to get a bit crazy. But I think with John, again, you know, so funny in interviews, so quick-witted and sharp, but he could also be very, like, cutting as well with how he said things. And you can almost see it in his eye when he's asked something he doesn't like. He just sort of, like,
we were saying about him, Get Back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, you could see it. And I like the way you described him, almost like an owl.
Yeah.
You know, his eyes, but they pierce it. You know, you can see just a little switch.
Yeah.
A comment he says, or look, you know, it's like, ooh, what's that that's just come out there?
That's triggered something.
You know, who's that? Yeah.
I like we've talked about Get Back, which, as Beatles fans, we will flip around a bit here. But with Get Back, I think, you know, I've watched it 5 or 6 times now. It's a dream for someone who's a Beatles fan, just watching those interactions, because you learn that for Paul and John, all you think about at that time is that they hate each other.
Yeah.
When you watch that, it's difficult when they're in the Twickenham studios, but when they move to Apple Studios in that smaller space and they're together, they're actually getting on all right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they're having a laugh together, you know, and John is really funny. He's naturally funny. Like, you know, I reckon he could have honestly had a career in comedy.
Yeah.
Because he could turn on accents, he could play different characters, and he did star in films as well, didn't he? Do you know what I mean? So, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's going back to safety there, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I know I mentioned, I think it was last time we were talking, I was saying, like, it's a safe base. You know,
exactly.
So for them, so it wasn't over. You know, when you watch the documentary, there's so many people around them to start off with.
Yeah.
Loads of people. And then, yeah, when they're in their safety, their home.
Yes.
You know, it's like, right, we can get on, but also we can tell people to go away.
That's
you
right.
Know, there's a comment when they were like, no, we want to play now.
Yeah, well, that was the bit with John, I think, where it's like, it's all like a friendly atmosphere. There's one point, George is just about to start going into a song and people are talking and he just turns around and he's being serious this time. He's like, can you not talk when we're about to play?
Yeah.
And that's with that look. And I thought, ooh, that would ice the room like straight away, you know, because there's the discussion between, you know, it was John's band, you know, and that was, he was boss, as Paul says that on the documentary. But then we just rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
But Brian Epstein dies. Another death of a father figure. I mean, there was talk about that they'd had, there was sort of a sexual element to it as well. Brian adored John. Brian was a gay man and absolutely, like, was obsessed with John Lennon, apparently. And then they were away, weren't they? They were actually in Wales, the Beatles, with the Maharishi or something. And they get a phone call to find out that Brian's died. Another loss. So we're talking about, it reminds me of Dave Grohl.
Yeah. Yeah,
we talked about before, he had the Kurt Cobain thing, didn't he? And then probably a bit worse for John Lennon, because he lost family members and people like that. But just that, well, it's not worse, is it? It's just different. But having that much loss can really hurt. Mm. Because I think at that time, the sort of mid-60s, where they'd decide to end touring because it wasn't feasible. They couldn't hear themselves sing. They wanted to concentrate on making music, but they were also meditating a lot. They were experimenting with LSD, and that was changing their music. So, you know, that's where we get Sgt. Pepper's and all of that out of it, Yellow Submarine. But then he'd get a phone call and another person's gone.
Yeah.
And I think that must be, again, he must start to think, he's gone over the time. What do you think? Is this me? Why me?
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, why would I get close to people?
Yeah. Let them in.
Yeah. Why am I letting people in? But that, you know, talk of relationships. Obviously, we had Cynthia and Yoko.
Yes.
You know, so two variety. But again, there's talk of he wasn't always the nicest in the relationships.
Yeah.
You know, when elements of abuse coming in, you know, physically, emotionally. But I don't know. They both come across as very strong women.
Yes, definitely. Like
very set. I know the interview with Cynthia, I heard, and she was like, yeah, he just didn't love me anymore.
No.
Like, I'm not gonna, that's it, yeah.
It goes back to that bit about him, you being flavour of the month, and then you're not.
Yeah.
You know, I think Yoko, I think, was John's spiritual equivalent.
Yeah.
You know, like, he met her at an art gallery and she handed him a piece of paper that said breathe on it.
Mm.
That's all it said.
Yeah.
And that was it. Apparently from there, like, that was it.
That was it, yeah.
And we talk about breathing. Mm. We talk about stepping away, don't we? And I think for him, then that's where the switch flicked.
Yeah.
Obviously, for Cynthia, I mean, Lennon said that until he met owner, I'm just reading you, he had never questioned his chauvinistic attitude towards women. Mm. I used to be cruel to my woman and physically any woman. I was a hitter. I couldn't express myself and I hit. I fought men and I hit women. Mm-hmm. That is why I'm always on about peace. Mm. So yeah. It's almost like Yoko's getting it because, look, this is what I like about people. No one's perfect. Mm. John is one of the ones where you can say, look, he was a bully when he was younger. He was a bully when he was older. And he was abusive to women. Mm-hmm. Emotionally sometimes as well as physically, but he's a tortured soul, an absolute tortured soul. And I think that thing about, I didn't know how to express myself, so I hit.
Yeah.
You deal with people who have anger issues, don't you? And sometimes you have to get it out, don't you?
You have to physically just let out. I know, I'd said, what was it, last week? I just had a cry and I said, I basically just got beaten up by 7 year olds.
But
that's what he just needed to let it out and to just be able to regulate, and actually have that opportunity. And then, it's interesting, obviously, his different relationships with his two sons.
Yes.
As well. I know Julian, actually said he saw John more as a wise uncle, not a father.
Yeah.
Father figure. And there wasn't he was absent.
Yeah, 100% with John. With Julian, he didn't give him his time. McCartney wrote, "Hey Jude," to comfort Julian. It was like, and if you listen to the words in that, now you know that fact.
Yeah.
That's very, very different. You'll get a different take on it. I think he let Julian, he started to repair it a little bit in the 70s. Yeah. Julian played drums on one of his albums, on Walls and Bridges, and John bought him a guitar. But like you said, he was almost like the cool uncle then, because it's like, I'll buy you stuff.
Yeah, but like his marriage, Cynthia, initially it was hidden.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because, well,
so it's that.
Because he was born in 63 in the height when the Beatles were just taking off.
Yeah.
So he's always had to have that there. Sean was the one who had them. So that was from Julian was with Yoko. Yeah. With Cynthia.
Cynthia, yeah.
Sean was with Yoko. Mm-hmm. And that's the bit they talk about in the 70s. When he fully relocated to New York and he was on about his peace, he was being more of a stay-at-home dad. And I think he was trying to repair a lot of things. Because obviously we know the Beatles ended. It is acrimonious. It was a big lawsuit, and it was horrible for two best friends to have to go through that. But he'd even through the 70s started to repair with Paul.
Yeah.
Trying to repair with Julian, spend a little bit more time together. But Sean was actually the one out of that time got the most benefit because John was basically, he was working.
He took like about 5 years out, didn't he?
He stayed on dad.
Yeah.
And that's, do you think that's a bit of guilt?
Yeah, and is he, like, the question with that, is he trying to repair, who's he trying to repair it for?
Yeah.
Is he trying to say, oh, no, I can be a dad? Is he actually saying, well, I wasn't there for Julian, but actually I'm going to see Sean as Julian, if that makes sense, and project a lot of what he didn't do onto Sean, so Sean got probably the best of him as a dad.
And if you think, we talked about this before, but it's really... This is a really hard quote to hear, but he was interviewed by Playboy, Lennon. This was not long before he died. Mm. He said, "Sean is a planned child and therein lies the difference. I don't love Julian any less as a child. He's still my son. Whether he came from a bottle of whiskey or because they didn't have pills in those days, he's here, he belongs to me and he always will." And he was trying to reestablish the connection with him at that time. And he's like, but the step there, even though they have, Julian and I will have a relationship in the future. That's just...
Yeah,
you can have it. You're having one now. It's just it's just building blocks. But I found his way of explaining things like that.
But hearing that as Julian as well.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, it must have been. But also, if we flip back to Yoko a minute, obviously he meets Yoko, and obviously at the Beatles, it's obvious that Paul, George, and John in particular have got these songs that they probably don't see as Beatles songs, maybe to a degree.
Yeah.
George is finally finding his voice. And obviously we said in Get Back, he's starting to stand up for himself a little bit. He's been a bit confrontational. Paul's trying to keep him in line. And sometimes he is a bit overbearing. It would be annoying. He's, don't do this, do this, do that. And John kind of grows through the documentary, doesn't he? In terms of.
And Ringo's
of
just off his face.
And Ringo's
but anyway, he's just singing about octopuses and stuff.
Yeah, he's just so funny. But Yoko's there the whole time.
The whole time, yeah.
And they said, didn't they? There's one bit where they went for a meeting with George.
Mm.
And Paul and Linda and Ringo are there and they're just saying, well, John didn't speak, Yoko spoke for him. And I kind of think maybe it's just that strong-willed woman of going, John, if this is not what you want to do anymore, you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
So if you want to go off and do other things now and campaign for peace, write your own music.
Yeah.
You can, because most of the songs that John wrote under the Beatles, other than the odd tracks like Nowhere Man or Help, where he or Julia about his mum, where he would be honest, all the others were about like mystical like things random. Or just random things. Yeah. He comes out, and this is the first album I got you to listen to, wasn't it? When we, like, on Book Club, and you walked on with Jeepers. Like, the first song's Mother on the first album, and stripped back, piano, bass, drums, and this, you get the personal John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
You get, I can't remember any songs on the album, 12, 13, wherever it is, and it's all about that.
Yeah.
So maybe...
It's all about trauma, it's all about bereavement. You know, it's him processing everything, you know, there's the screams, there's everything.
Exactly.
There. It is a really... Yeah, it is basically like listening to therapy.
Well, he'd just been going through the Primal Scream therapy?
Yeah.
He'd been going through that, and it's basically this album is like him doing that,
yeah.
So I think for Yoko, she gets a lot of stick. She'd had it tough, and maybe she's someone we talk about in the future as well, to maybe just shine a little bit of a different light. But she took a lot of the flack for breaking up the Beatles. But if you watch it, we got... I think the Beatles would have they would have got back together years to come. Obviously, his life was cut short. We'll come to that in a minute. But I think, like, she might have just said to John, he would have been coming home and confiding to her how he feels. Yeah. And she might have gone, well, why are you do... You say it sometimes, well, if you don't want to do something, mate, why are you doing it?
Why are you doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, so I think for her, it'd be very interesting. But, yeah, we talked about earlier, he'd changed his name by deed poll in 1969, adding Ono as a middle name. So, yeah, I think, you know, very forward-thinking. And then all the peace, they did campaign heavily for peace, didn't they?
So it was the bed... Was it a bed-in
the
protest?
Bed-in.
So that was... Yeah.
They did it on their honeymoon, I think, didn't they? In Amsterdam, in a hotel in Amsterdam. So, yeah, they do the Ballad of John and Yoko, which is almost the song about their honeymoon.
Yeah.
But they're like, why are you... Like, people saying, well, you look like two something in drag, innit? You look like two people in drag. But they would just stay in their bed, grew their hair out, and said, we're doing it for
peace. That's what you're saying, grow your hair, wasn't it? He was encouraging people to. But that now was a lot about... Was it around the Vietnam War, that one? Or
it was.
Yeah, yeah. If you look... I probably won't put the link in, because I don't know whether it'll flash up. But if you Google John Lennon FBI, you can find his FBI watch notes on FBI website. Yeah, so they release. It's got... The first two parts of this release consist of previously released material from investigations that mention Lennon's connection to anti-war and related groups in the late 60s and 70s. Third part was released and posted in November 2011, which consists of other references to Lennon in FBI files and a 1978 investigation of a violent threat made against him.
Wow.
So he was on the watch list, like Cass Stevens, interestingly, who was speaking out about peace, you know, about everything. Yeah.
It's interesting. I think, like... Mm. They also, they really struggled to get, like, John his visa for America, didn't they? And Yoko, because they wanted to reside in Manhattan. He always said that he could be himself in New York. Mm. He couldn't in England. You know, he couldn't walk down the street in England. But in New York, he could walk amongst people and he would be left alone.
Yeah.
So they got their visa in the end. Yeah. But it was the American authorities were making it very, very difficult for him. It's also, as well, we should just touch on, it's so much in his life. I mean, we'll start wrapping it up shortly. But his Lost Weekend with May Pang.
Yeah.
Like
she
worked Alan Klein, who oversaw the Beatles at the end. May Pang worked as a receptionist for him in 1969, and she became Lennon and Ono's personal assistant then.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1973, after she'd been working with a couple for 3 years, Ono confided that she and Lennon were becoming estranged. They were going through their difficulties. She went on to suggest that Pang should begin a physical relationship with Lennon, telling her he likes you a lot.
Mm.
She was astounded, but she agreed to become Lennon's companion. They left for LA for 18 months. And then he called that his Lost Weekend. Which
it's a hell of a weekend.
But it was actually Pang, apparently, who encouraged Lennon to develop a contact with Julian.
Mm.
He also rekindled his friendships then with Ringo, with Paul. They roadie Mal, and he's got an interesting story, but we'll touch on that in the future. And Harry Nilsson, because he used to go out on the piss with Harry Nilsson. Mm. But I just think that's, again, just another aspect of his life where you go, Jesus Christ, like, you're in a relationship. Rather than fix it, then almost like sanctioned by his wife, she's like saying, you need to go away and have that.
Yeah.
Again, how would she have felt being back at home? I don't know, you know, it's just...
But then, like you said, Yoko's such a free-spirited and will person. Maybe she thought, actually, that's what's needed.
Yeah.
You know, when you need to hear this, so off you go. Yeah. Yeah. So, but then, obviously, it's touching on... So they moved to the Dakota for more security.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like it. I think I said to you a couple of documentaries, well, a podcast documentary, and people say, we're not going to name the person.
No.
Who did it.
No.
And it's, that's what I know Jacinda Ardern did in Christchurch with the shootings. And they said, we're not going to name the person who did it. But he was shot and killed outside his home.
Yeah. And he was meant to go through the back way, wasn't he? But he came through the front. And the person who took his life was waiting.
Yeah.
He was reading The Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
He had that in his pocket and he shot, I think he fired 6 shots, 5 of them hit John. He was rushed to hospital, but they were saying the surgeon had his hand on his heart. He was trying to literally bring him back to life physically with his hand, but he was gone. And obviously his connection to New York after he died, they've got the tribute of him in Central Park.
It is, his ashes were scattered, very close to the Dakota.
Because
I was there earlier this year. Yeah.
And I just think, you know, really sad. And you look at it now, like, you know, we're here, you know, over 40 years later, and he's no less significant.
Yeah.
And that probably will, because we come along now and then.
Yeah.
You know, and we were so excited, and then we weren't disappointed.
Yeah.
I think it wouldn't have mattered what kind of song it was, just hearing his voice so clear.
Mm.
You know, the work has done, because Peter Jackson did Get Back. They developed technology that allowed them to strip the sound away, because apparently the piano dominated the original recording. So when they did the anthology in the 90s, they couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
They physically couldn't do anything with it. So they came back to it with this technology. And I think, again, it's that John's knack for simplicity.
Mm.
Like about now and then, if we can start again, you know, hoping you're thinking of me and things like that. So, look, massive impact.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to have. So, look, I hope people enjoy it. Thanks for coming along the ride. I hope that does a bit of justice to 100 episodes.
100 episodes, you know?
And getting to talk about John in Liverpool is pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Seagull.
Corner.
Seagull. Oh, okay. All right. Off you go. I don't know if we've mentioned it's our 100th episode.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it didn't just crept up on me.
Yeah, so we've done all right. We should do something for our 100th, really, shouldn't we?
I think the Pseudo Cool should have released the roller for our 100th, shouldn't
I think they should have, yeah. Or somebody could have released a song for us.
Stop holding on to it.
Yeah. Like, release a song to celebrate us. Who's going to do that? Imagine.
We should have got our sea shanty done.
Yeah.
We have to go for 200 now. Sorry, Q&A.
Right, okay, so we got... Yeah, it's nice. We've had a few questions from people.
Yeah.
So I'll just go through them nice and quick. So, Lloyd, what challenge did you dread doing the most? Lloyd from Pseudo Cool, sorry. Hi, Lloyd.
Hi, Lloyd. What one did I dread doing the most? Climbing the tree.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Because I used to climb trees as a kid.
Yeah.
But I thought... Am I physically able to get up a tree now? And if I get up there, will I get down safely? Yeah. Fortunately, I did.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking to myself, I went up to Coed Mawr and Owen came with me and he was just trying to find a tree I could get up, you know, that I could get back down again. Yeah. But what about yours?
Mine, playing guitar and filming myself. So another early one, two early ones.
Yeah.
And just that worry of, oh, am I going to get this done? But it's done.
Yeah.
It's out there.
People can listen.
So this guy Key Govard,
I don't know.
No. So he's got a few for us. How have you grown as people since before or after the podcast? Yeah,
you touched on it in the intro, I think. Like reflecting back to me, I think being open, being honest, taking time for yourself, and definitely I think you asked me a question in the early days about take care for yourself or take care for others, and I said, and a load of people have actually fed back about this when they listen to it, that they heard me say taking care of myself, because if I'm not in tip-top shape I can't take care for others. Doesn't mean I don't take care of others, but I've had a rough time, particularly 2020 to probably 22. I've only really started to feel myself properly this year, but I think don't laugh, but the pod does help you to channel and go, right, I've got to prepare, I'm going to talk, but I'm also going to be bringing in my own experiences as kind of a form of therapy.
I think for me, confidence to just talk to people
at
gigs, you know, like Devorden was a big one for me. The number of people I was just grabbing, talking to, and actually that's something I'm not good at networking, but it's really boosted, and now in work I can do it, so that, but also as well just understanding music a bit more, you know. And that favorite episode of the podcast,
I really like the Amy one.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, and we had a lot of good feedback. I think even Sarah listened and said that was, she loved that one.
Yeah.
And I think, I realised like how much of an impact she had, and also for Riot as well.
Yeah, that was good fun. That was good fun. I'll add on Big Sesh, because I think that's where we realised we're going down a different angle.
Yeah.
You know, and having that.
We're not going to pick a guest because they were all great.
Well, I said I'd say Pseudo Cool just because it's from Keith.
So the cat amongst the pigeons.
Yes, so the cat amongst the pigeons. Well, if somebody does a song for us, then who knows?
Yep.
Bread and butter pudding, overrated or underrated?
Never had it.
What?
I have never ever had bread and butter pudding. I wouldn't even.
It was like a staple sort of dessert for us we used to have growing up. I like it.
What is it?
As long as it's not burnt. I think it's bread, butter, and raisins.
In like a loaf tin sweet. Or something, isn't it?
Yeah, you sort of put like sweet stuff in it, but yeah.
Someone would like to send me in some bread and butter pudding.
Well, yeah, go for it. And then naturally, you know, somebody else has got in touch, obviously, Kiwi. But he's actually just given a few things that he liked.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, go for it.
So he's put about the task and story where the cook spent time in the countryside drawing with Nora.
Yeah, cool.
Going out and about. Yeah. Where Max's voice note featured.
Yes.
Which is quite funny because he's... He just says love you instead.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool though. It's cute.
He likes the shout outs to his mum. So hi, Kiwi's mum. The theme of the suicides. So cool. We put the suicide series. Didn't really realise we did a series, but so yeah. But yeah, just he said he was quite fascinating. He liked some of his favourite episodes. The personal pods. And I think maybe we should do a couple more.
We got some ideas.
He liked meeting us, luckily.
Good.
And every time shipmates sounds like shipmates.
I don't know what he's on about, shipmate.
But so
when people say, like, say the thank you very much, or thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's off a TV program, so I'm sure it is. But, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, for sending that.
Yeah, cheers, guys, for that. Like, we like the interactions.
Yeah, it makes our job, like, give us something to talk about.
Our Spotify Wraps out as well, so maybe in episode 101, we might talk a bit about that.
Cool.
We might do, might not.
Might
right,
not.
Let's go.
On our next voyage.
Love you.
Yeah, love you too. But can you say, on our next voyage?
On our next voyage.
Yeah, high five. Good boy.
On our next voyage.
On our next voyage.
On our next voyage.
Okay, thanks, child. I'm not sure which one. Obviously, in the reflections, maybe you did put in Max, since that was one of Curie's reflections and the Pseudo Corner. But what you were going to say, should we?
I was going to say, right, because we're recording this and I can edit it after.
Yeah.
We'll stick all the kids in there.
Should we put everyone in?
We'll put them all
can
in
I
there.
Go in there as well?
Yeah, yeah.
You're too late. But send in, if you've got children or you can do a child's voice. Please say on our next voyage. So we have a listener has given us a challenge. It's not one that will complete straight away. I wonder who it is. Let's find out.
Captain and Cook, I'm not going to record everything I've sent you because that would take a very long time. And I don't want to steal your thunder on the pod. However, 100 episodes does warrant a very special challenge. And as you know, Captain, because you've asked me to record this, I expect you to use it because I want it out there. I would like the Captain and the Cook for the challenge as a reward for getting to 100 episodes to complete a world record in 2024. Now that can be individual, together, doesn't matter. It can be anything. Anything at all. Go wild with your ideas. But it has to be an official Guinness World Record. Best of luck, gents.
Okay. Thanks, Q. They're always easy with Q, aren't they?
Oh, they're really easy. They're ones that you've basically completed before he finishes the sentence.
Yeah.
So, I'm wondering what's the longest someone's spent on the toilet? Or maybe... spend in the pub.
I did read something about it.
Most pigs in blankets eaten.
We could do that, yeah.
We could probably try that one.
They also, I saw the other day about the toilet thing, about like how much blokes spend on toilets because there's safe space, and Sarah's like, you spend at least double that. So that's good.
I just sent memes to Charlotte. That's it. Charlotte knows if I'm on there for a while because she gets loads of memes coming through from Instagram.
Well, I tell you what we're going to have to do. Yeah. We're going to have to either loan from the library or buy at the end of the Guinness
Book of Records.
And I am ready for Records.
I used to get that for Christmas.
Me too.
Well, we were talking about Christmas presents.
So if
anyone would like to buy us for Christmas, QE, you always buy me a gift. Buy us a Guinness Book of World Records.
We'll have a look through.
And I will.
Can you set a new one?
I'm not sure.
No.
I attempted one. I didn't complete it. So when I was working with Bernardo's, it was the most hugs completed by someone in a bear outfit. And I did it in St. David's too.
So was we it had to people run away.
Yeah. So my nieces wouldn't go near me. I was in a bear outfit. I was dressed up as the girl bear from Bernardo's. And we had to go. We were in St. David's too. And we had to literally get people lined up. They had someone from Guinness World Records like filming.
Yeah.
And I had to give as many hugs as possible. Scotland beat me. But the funny thing is, so to get changed, I had to be led back through to like an underground thing to get changed. So my colleague Ian, who he listens to the show sometimes. Show?
And it is a show.
So he was walking me back and I ripped my hand away from him. I just ran into Superdry, shop, dressed as a stuffed bear.
The biggest shop in St. David's.
So ran in there, then I was walking around waving at people in Costa. And he just didn't know what
to do.
That
would be the day to go in your favourite shops and just take things. Because they would have probably just thought it was a gimmick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doing it on Lego and just taking
But I'll show you a photo like that. I've got a photo of those sort of things.
You got a post.
With the one photo is of Charlotte wearing the bear hat.
Right.
When she's cooking. People. It's not a way fetish. but world records. Yeah, let's go. Done.
Cool.
We can retire now. Thanks, guys.
We're going to go with that. I don't need to speak to ever again.
No.
We've done what we had come up to achieve.
We've done what we needed to do. We hit 100 episodes.
It's like, you know when you set up a company and then you fold it when it's done?
Let's float.
Let's float. Oh, yeah, we'll go to the stocks.
We'll go to the stocks.
Exchange.
Stock exchange. Why not? I'm sure people would buy into this.
My dad had an ad. We were talking about 99.
Yeah.
And I said on the pod, I couldn't remember how much my dad got paid.
Mm.
6 times his salary for working that Millennium New Year's Eve.
Jeez.
I asked him the other day, would you do that again for 6 times your salary? He went, yeah, in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I think I would.
He said, but I'd ask him also. He said, I'd want a day or two in lieu back.
Yeah.
He said, I'd add that on because I'm giving up my New Year's Eve and blah, blah, blah. So that was good. And obviously, we've had some, I've had some nice conversations with the last 100, particularly people who listen regular, and just say how much they appreciate it. And I think, we'll do this for as long as it feels relevant.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like even if we only had a couple of listeners, right? If it helps you, if it's part of your routine, but you can help us by talking to other people about it.
Yeah.
But you've got to get them to do something. So when you're with them, don't just say, you should listen to this pod. Take them onto Instagram, get them to follow the page.
Subscribe. Give
us
5 stars.
We forgot, we're a 5-star pod.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's like, is it Wolf of Wall Street where he like shouts, I'm not going anywhere?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not leaving.
Nah, we're not leaving.
I'm not going.
No.
I love it as well. I love it. But anyway, I think that's enough.
Yeah.
Let's
go try and find a seagull, shall we?
Yeah, shall we? Till next time, ta from me.
Ta from
Ta-la.
Him. We're going to keep talking a bit because my phone's locked.
Ta-la.